Yes, it is my car guru time. It's my car guru time. Here he is, the guru, Lenny Lawson. You like that?
My car guru time. It's my car guru time.
You can borrow that anytime you want to.
I could change the theme, the musicians from you and from the Crash Test Dummies to you and me.
That would go over like a lead balloon, probably. No, it'd probably go over pretty well. You're a good little singer and guitar player and everything, so we could do that.
And you could play the drums.
Sure, I could start pounding on the drums a little bit.
Did you ever listen to the Crash Test Dummies?
A little bit, not a whole lot, but I've heard some of them, yeah.
Very unusual voices.
Mm-hmm.
I was never heard of them, but it was one Christmas morning. Blaine, my son, wanted a Crash Test Dummy CD for Christmas, so we got him that. He had a list of things, so we got it. And, you know, I started listening to it. And I said, "Why do you like this? You know, it's just so different." I mean, the guy's voice was just very, very low, and if you listen to it, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll wonder why Lenny Lawson likes it now. Well, now I like it because he liked it, and also because it's just unique.
Mm-hmm.
And actually ended up going to the Orange Peel over in Asheville and watching them perform.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting as well. So, you know, they're not a big time. They're not like the Beatles, far from it. But pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say another singer that I've kind of fallen in love with recently is Diana Krall.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of her? K-R-A-L-L?
Yeah, she's got a great voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Little jazz player, you know, plays different music. But we discovered her on a trip to Cincinnati, and we were just kind of looking around for something to listen to. And there she was. And now I think my wife listens to her all the time at her quilting studio. So very relaxing, peaceful music. So that's it for today for my music guru. And we'll see you tomorrow.
That's it for the music portion of our show.
Yeah, the music portion of the first segment, yeah. We can jump into a little bit of news. I hate to see this. General Motors on Tuesday said that it's closing three North American full-size pickup truck plants. They're closed next week due to the why do you think they're closing?
Well, probably the concerns about the Delta variant, I would imagine.
No, that's not it.
No,
it's
okay.
Still that nagging
computer.
Semiconductor.
Oh, okay, computer chip. I thought we were kind of starting to get past that.
No, it's they were running. They had reopened the plants and in Flint, Michigan, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and in Mexico, and they had just started basically resumed production earlier 2 weeks ago, and then had shut down again.
Hmm.
The car companies are requiring workers to resume wearing masks, though. New federal guidelines and recent rise in COVID-19 cases because of that Delta variant. Car companies are joining other corporations, just like I think Microsoft said it's delaying full opening of its U.S. offices by a month and requiring proof of vaccination for all employees. We had one guy that, one of our employees, he had got COVID and then, thought he was immune to it. And then he got it again, recently. So he's out again for 2 weeks. He's one of our better technicians.
Hmm.
And, so, you know, we hate to see that. His entire family has it, kids, wife, everybody.
Hmm.
So, you know, this stuff is still here. I think I don't know. My response to it is different. There was some degree of fear and trepidation, you know, the way I would open doors and stuff like that. I'm a little more careless now. How are you, Tim? Are you more careless?
I don't wear gloves to handle things or anything like that. I'll wear a mask when I think I need to some stores and most stores and so forth, but I'm not overly careful about it as far as wearing gloves or using a paper towel to touch something or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I retired my hazmat suit.
Yeah, it didn't didn't fit you quite right anyway. It was, since you're so tall, it was a little bit short. So I think it's good that you returned that.
Very cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not bumping fist anymore. I'm shaking hands. So I'm full on body contact. Oh, Lord. Lord. Anyway, we have several interesting things to talk about. You know, a big part of my formative years in the car business were the 80s, the decade of the 80s. And basically in 1978 was my June or July of 1978 was my first month in the car business. And we had a general manager that was running things. And, of course, my dad was running things, but the general sales manager took up most responsibility for sales, and my first job was in service. And then we worked together. Sometimes we butted heads over the years. I think he was a little, I don't know, I'm not sure he wanted me there. He thought I was an obstacle to his advancement. And eventually he peeled off in 1984 and went with a competitor. And so that opened the door for me to step in. And, you know, the 80s was a strange time for the car business. You know, I don't know if you remember, but 1979, we had another oil embargo.
Mm-hmm.
And that put a lot of pressure on the automakers, you know, to come up with some, especially the domestic automakers. They had had some winter products, and especially Chevrolet. I'll just speak from that perspective, but you know, I could also include Ford to a certain degree with the Ford Pinto. But, you know, in 1970, Chevrolet came out with the Vega. And the Vega lasted, well, basically 71 through 77 when they finally pulled the plug on that. And then the Vega became the Monza. I don't know if you remember that car. And, you know, that car lasted until 1982 when Chevrolet released a car that eventually became a bestseller. And it was called the Chevy Cavalier.
Mm-hmm.
But in the decade of the 80s, we were trying to respond to some of the up-and-coming imports like the Honda Accord. The Honda Accord and the Honda Civic had pretty much taken on the world by storm, and they were selling really well and really biting at the heels of the domestics, and they really needed to do something. But the best-selling car in 1980 was actually the Oldsmobile Cutlass. The Cutlass came out. It had a quad headlight. They had a notchback styling. Really, the fastbacks were a novelty. I mean, you could get a fastback, but people just didn't really like them. They liked that formal notchback roof. You know what I'm talking about, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
It had a pretty remarkable 350 V8 engine for the time. You know, they came out with the Olds 442, which was a muscle car, a four-barrel carburetor, dual exhaust, bucket seats. And Americans bought them like crazy. Oldsmobile sold 460,000 units of the Cutlass Supreme. And I mean, it was just record-breaking for them. You know, today the best-selling car is Toyota Camry. And it's selling in the 350,000 range. 1981, Chevrolet took over the lead with a new small car. Did you ever own a Chevy Chevette?
I did not. I had a friend or two that had them, but I never owned one.
You know, they sold for less than $5,500 mm-hmm. and were marketed as a reliable commuter car.
Mm-hmm.
They had a three- or a five-door model, which that's when they first started calling the rear hatch a door. It is really nothing to write home about. I didn't like the cars, personally. We sold a lot of them. Chevy sold 433,000 in 1981.
Hmm.
And, you know, it was a pretty good response to the some of the smaller cars from Toyota and Honda. But then the trucks took over. Best-selling vehicle in 1982 was the Ford F-Series. I think that was the first year of its dominance, and it continued for up until today. You know, Ford sells, well, they won't this year, but I think they'll still maintain leadership, because it's so important that they do from a marketing standpoint. But 44 years in a row, they've been the best-selling vehicle. 1983, Cutlass Supreme took over again. 1984 was a huge change for the industry, and that's when the minivan came out, and we'll continue this list in just a minute.
All right, back here on My Car Guru as we're making our way through the 80s, and 1984, it wasn't George Orwell watching over, it was Lee Iacocca, wasn't it?
Yeah, no kid. You know, the concept of a small van was nothing new. You know, Chevrolet had the small van called the Greenbrier, and it was based on a Corvair platform. The you know, Ford had a small van. Of course, the small bus that VW made. So, you know, they just weren't mainstream. You know, they were more used for commercial use and that type of thing. But you know, Lee Iacocca came around and decided to rescue the Chrysler Corporation from bankruptcy, and created this front-wheel drive minivan. And, you know, they had three versions, one the Plymouth Voyager, the Dodge Caravan, and the Chrysler Town and Country. And they sold like hotcakes, totally caught General Motors and Ford flat-footed as far as the market was concerned. This is way ahead of the Chevy Astro van, the GMC Safari, the Ford Aerostar. You know, those were all responses. And they weren't successful responses either. The Astro was a much taller, built on top of a frame, basically a ladder-type frame like a truck. It had a very awkward driving position with a lot of intrusion of the wheel wells into the foot area where you would put your feet. I always just got so irritated every time I got into an Astro van, having to find a place to put my feet, you know. But the Chrysler had a flat floor, you know, and it had comfortable access, easy access to get into the one side. Now, and then later on, there were some innovations that came from GM and Ford, like the power sliding doors and putting doors on both sides. But Chrysler was the beginning of this. Now, minivan sales are starting to come back a little bit now. For a long time, they've been down and continue to go down. Matter of fact, Honda Odyssey, Toyota Sienna, and I think there's still a Hyundai or a Kia van out there. But it all started in 1984. 1985, Chevrolet finally broke through again with the Chevy Cavalier. And, you know, the Cavalier sold 383,000 in 1985. They had a two-door, a four-door model. And they were sold as sedans, hatchbacks, station wagons. I mean, it was the everything car to them. And Ford really didn't have a good response until a couple years later. The Chevy Celebrity, I think it came out in 1984. It actually was the best-selling car in 1986 with 404,000. You know, I kind of like those cars. That was a good family-sized car, a good mid-sized car. We didn't have a Malibu anymore. You know, we needed something that could seat six people. And my wife and I drove Celebrities through the 80s. They're typically a station wagon. But we drove those for, you know, our family. And occasionally we would drive an Astro van, but like I said, it just didn't fit my feet very well. And Tara really didn't like driving a van. She wanted to drive a car, so we drove Celebrities all the time. And it was really a home run vehicle for Chevrolet. Stuck around for a while and then was replaced by the Chevrolet Lumina. 1987, the Chevy CK truck became the best-selling vehicle for that particular year. After that, it was the Ford Escort. This is when Ford took over the winning position for small cars. They did it with this particular car, which was kind of a world car for them. You know, it was something that Ford finally figured out that we need to build a car that is not just specific to the United States. We need something that we can sell in other countries. And the problem with that, Tim, are they're totally different standards. in different countries. For example, in the United States, gasoline engines are the most popular. But far and away, the most popular engine in Europe are diesels.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you go to France or Italy or England, for that matter, most of the small cars are going to have either three- or four-cylinder diesel engines, and that was true back then as well, because the problem is gasoline taxes in Europe were just so high, and diesel fuel, you could get better mileage and good performance, but they just never really took off in the United States because of the cheaper gasoline. And Americans just didn't like the noise. You know, about the only company that was successful making marketing a diesel engine in the United States was Mercedes-Benz.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people liked the Mercedes-Benz diesels because they were basically bulletproof. I mean, you could put 400,000 or 500,000 miles on an engine and not have to worry about it as long as you kept it serviced. And the car bodies would just about last that long. You know, Mercedes were pretty much bulletproof cars back then. I think Mercedes has really kind of lost their way and their cachet, so to speak. They're just not, the design is just not there to differentiate like it was. I just love those big Mercedes grills, you know, and the big TriStar mm-hmm. hood ornament that they all used to have on them. And, but that is one of the main reasons why the difference. You know, Ford decided to go ahead and we got to build this, use a unique body and have the same basic features, but we'll be able to pop different engines in it depending on the market. You know, as far as the laws for safety, crash integrity and stuff like that, those are different. And those have become more uniform. And that's why you see companies like Ford building Ford Mustangs and shipping so many of them overseas, is because they finally are all building cars that can be built in one country and marketed in another country. A best-selling car in 1989, well, you'll notice that it's the first import on this list, and it was the Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm.
The Accord sold 362,000 units. It was reliable. It was comfortable. It was attractive. Americans liked the size of it. They liked the design of it, and, you know, it really started to put the hurts on the domestic automakers, and we suffered with that through until, of course, I was a Mazda dealer, and the only thing that we had to defend ourselves against the Accord and the Camry, basically, was the Mazda 626, and it was a wonderful car, and it was priced competitively, and that gave us, I mean, we did really, really well with the Mazda 626. And then all of a sudden, they started thinking that they were the Honda Accord and started pricing it like a Honda Accord. And we had no incentives on the things, no rebates. And folks just, you know, they didn't buy it. And so the sales started to decline. And then finally, Mazda said, okay, we got to make this car special again. And they did. And it became successful again. And Ford thought that it was so successful that they decided they needed a new mid-size car just under the Ford Taurus. And they said, you know, Mazda, since they own 30% of Mazda, they said, Mazda has a tremendous platform in the Mazda 6. Let's build a car based on that. We'll just use that platform and build us cars. So they built the Ford Fusion. And the Ford Fusion became a very good seller, you know, for the Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at the time of Alan Mulally, who was the CEO of Ford. And he said, why are we building all these different cars all over the world and just kind of keeping them separate from one another? Let's start sharing platforms. We can save costs this way. And, you know, we can build cars that Americans want to buy. And boy, he sure turned it around for the Ford Motor Company. We're still reaping the fruits of the decisions that Alan Mulally, who was a Boeing executive when he came to Ford, decisions that he made really turned around the Ford Motor Company. So that's basically the decade of the 80s. sometimes I look back on that and I just can't believe that it went by that fast.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fun decade. It was fun. My son was born in 83. Abby was born in 85 and Audra in 87. So it was a very busy year for the Lawson family. The decade of the 80s. But it was an interesting decade as far as the car business is concerned, too. But we'll take our last break and be back in just a minute.
And back here to wrap up My Car Guru on this Wednesday, just a couple of notes to add to your list there. Lenny, it's interesting. My first son was born in 83 and my second son in 85. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, same age as your first two kids there. And, you know, also I had two of the cars on that list, 85 Cavalier. And then I had an 88 Celebrity.
Okay.
Yeah.
And which did you like better?
Probably the Cavalier. It got a little bit better gas mileage and seemed to be a little bit more dependable to me. Now, I know that some folks had Cavaliers that wasn't that dependable. Ours seemed to be pretty good. The Celebrity was good, too. It was more comfortable to ride in, though.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, if you look at the quality of the cars today, the way they're put together, the quality of the materials, just the overall drivability and performance, and you compare it to a Chevy Celebrity, they don't compare very well.
No.
The paint quality, reliability, you know, those were the early days of fuel injection, still using a lot of carburetors, but they were coming out with the throttle body injection, which was a single injector that it injected fuel, kind of like sat on top of the engine like a carburetor, and then would give a more precise shot of fuel down the intake. Those things were the beginning of a lot of changes. When you think about bestsellers, those aren't always the most influential vehicles. But in the case of the Chrysler minivan, it created a whole new segment in the industry, and and it still exists today, and it went through a lot of different iterations. But another vehicle that really changed in the 80s, that really changed the way people look at SUVs, was the Jeep Cherokee. You know, it came out in 1984, and it was the first unibody. It didn't have a ladder type frame. It was the first unibody SUV, and of course, all of them are that way now, except, you know, like the new Ford Bronco, the Expedition, Suburban, Tahoe, those have frames on them. But everything else that is considered an off-road vehicle has a unibody construction, and the first one of those was the Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah.
So anyway, lots of love to go around.
Mm-hmm. All right, that'll do it for My Car Guru on this Wednesday morning, and we will talk to you tomorrow, Lenny. Mm-hmm.